Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Into the Neuroverse presents...
Sort your brain out. Baby, sort your brain out. It's crazy, sort your brain out. And let the sun shine in. Sort your brain out. Lady, sort your brain out. It's crazy, sort your brain out. Don't let the bad guys win. Sort your brain out, mate.
Hello, everyone. And before we jump into the interview with Suze Kempner, I just wanted to say hello, everyone, which I've already said. I hope you're all doing well. I hope you're enjoying Into the Neuroverse. Two episodes should be out now. This is episode 3. As I've stated many, many times, there will be an interview with someone every third episode. So there, I don't know why I'm sticking to this, but I've decided this is the way. This is the way. It's fun. We talk about all sorts of things, and we end with me singing my song Golden Axe, which I wrote when I was about 12, probably younger, maybe 10, and has never left my brain. It's a thing with ADHD. These things, they get in there and they never go. Normal things go. Things that would be very helpful to remember go. But things like that, they never leave. I almost bought a book of 1950s photographs today. It was so beautiful, from a little flea market. And I stood there and I sort of froze for about 3 minutes, unable to make the decision because it was £8 and that just seemed too much. I mean, you'd happily spend that, wouldn't you, on a bagel and a coffee these days? Ugh, it's gross. Money's gross. Get rid of it. I want to live in Star Trek. So this tri-weekly idea is called Sort Your Brain Out, Mate. The idea is I speak to someone who is neurodiverse or who isn't neurodiverse or who might be neurodiverse but isn't sure. The point is, there's someone I admire who appears to be able to do things that I struggle with. I try and get some advice and thoughts from them, some little tips on how to navigate the neurotypical world. This week, I'm talking to the brilliant Suze Kempner, who is a fantastic actor, comedian, singer. She is amazing online. She's very good at navigating that world, which I find absolutely excruciating. I know a lot of people find comfort in it, especially if you are neurodiverse. It is a way of reaching out and connecting with people and so on. But I started doing comedy and acting really over 20 years ago now, and it still feels like a new thing, the whole social media world. It feels more and more like you have to be really connected to it, really selling yourself constantly to get anywhere, not just as a comedian, as an actor, as a writer, as a novelist, all these things, which is very stressful if you find that whole world very stressful. I personally think it's probably the worst thing to happen to humanity since the nuclear bomb. That's just my take, guys. Obviously, there's a benefit to both things. We have nuclear power. Arguably, that's also bad, but you know what I mean? As a talking point to try and help people with neurodiversity, maybe this feels a bit glib talking about social media, but it's so invasive and so much part of everyone's lives all the time now. I thought it would be a good place to start. And Suze has lots of takes on it. The main thing with social media for me is, like, I started acting 20 years ago and I was feeling particularly angry about the whole social media world and just like, why do I have to do this? I don't want to do this, you know. Everything I try to put out there, everything I try to get it off as a script or a novel or blah, 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 it's always this kind of like, could you build your Twitter base first a little bit and then maybe people will want to publish it? And you think, oh, fuck off, you know. Sometimes in the darker moments, I think if I'd known that 20 years on from becoming an actor, I'm following that dream. Like the old people always go, follow your dream. You've got to follow your dream, Colin. If I'd known, I would 20 plus years later have to no choice about it, navigate and be a part of the social media world. Ugh. And it feels at the minute like it's more important than the actual work, which is insane. If I'd known that, I really think I might not have done it. I really think I might have gone, yeah, I don't think that's for me, that life. But 20 plus years on, I've done all right as an actor and a comedian, and I need to keep that going. And the world changes as it does. Sadly, I haven't reached that point in my career where it is completely unnecessary for me to in any way navigate or connect with the social media world. I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm shitting on everyone who absolutely loves social media. That's absolutely fine. I just find it really, really tough. I really do. Sadly, I haven't got to that point where I can do it without it. So I'm trying to embrace it. It's a miracle, you know? My lovely yoga teacher today, she said, Einstein said you could either look at the world as if everything is a miracle or nothing is a miracle. Obviously, everything is a miracle is the better way to look at the world, isn't it? It's quite a loaded sort of question in a way, but it's a lovely one. And so social media is a miracle. It's a miracle. It's a miracle, everyone. And thank you, Suze Kempner, for giving me some tips and hopefully you on how to navigate it, because it is very stressful, let's be honest. The other thing to point out with Suze is she's very opinionated, not in an awful way. Some awful people are very opinionated, aren't they? And that's horrible. But she has strong opinions. Another thing I've always struggled to have, partly because I think, you know, being neurodiverse, I often think I'm probably wrong, aren't I? Because everyone else seems to be right and I seem to be wrong, blah, 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 because, you know. And so it's nice to hear these strong opinions. It's a good chat. I really enjoy it. I'm sort of giving away too much here. But yeah, we talk a bit about strong opinions, about political opinions, about being able to put out what you think, about telling the trolls to go away, basically by ignoring them. It's a lovely chat, I think. I hope you enjoy it. And go see her in Edinburgh. She's doing a show called Y2K Woman. Y2K Woman! I really enjoyed talking to her, and I hope you enjoy listening to us talk. I think that's how these things work. If you want to see me soon, live in the flesh, come see me perform. I'm doing the roundhouse on the 8th and 9th, no, 5th and 6th. I could just look it up. I can't. The 5th and 6th of August, I'm doing a work in progress of my new show, which is Me Being Me. And then I'm doing it again on the 7th at the Bill Murray. Don't forget to support the show if you can at patreon.com/Colin Holt. And my website is iamcolinholt.com if you want to find out where I'm at next. Thanks so much. Love you all. There's a lot of sort of umming and ahhing on this. I talk over Suze quite a lot. It's a thing. I'm learning not to. Just getting you prepared. I hope you have a wonderful listen. I really do. And I'll see you in the bath. What? Thanks for coming on. You're my first guest. My first ever person to talk
exciting.
To. I'm very nervous, but very excited. I peak and trough. I get very excited. And then I immediately think, oh, but what if I just can't do it? What if I can't speak? What if I forget
how to talk? Oh, so it's kind of like Edinburgh, the whole thing.
It's like the Edinburgh Festival, yeah. Gotcha. I guess so. I don't know. I think I have an arrogance for the Edinburgh Festival where I do. I've definitely had horrible times, but I feel like that's the one place, you know, talking about being neurodiverse and all that, which is literally the whole point of the podcast, but like that's the one place where I kind of I actually feel things make sense.
Okay. And yeah, because it's like being on a university campus, isn't it?
That's not a bad, yeah, it's a bit like that. And also doing a show
15
every
minutes
night
from everything.
When I'm on the stage doing, you know, it is a bit like, I find myself cringing at saying things like this, but it is a bit, I know you're a big fan of sort of all the Judy Garland-y.
Oh, yeah.
Were obviously, yeah, yeah. And Elvis and stuff. You know what I mean? Just that kind of big performance where, and those kind of tragic figures where it's like they're dead when they're not on stage almost. Do you know what I mean? Or they just kind of crumple up and can't deal with basic things.
I heard a guy who taught at my drama school, he told a story about being at the side. I don't know why he was doing this, but he seemed to know everybody. But he was at the side of the stage with Liza Minnelli. This was like 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And she was super sick, but she was still going on to do the show. And he was looking at her like she was all crook, like, you know, one of the spiders, all dehydrated. And he said he didn't know how she was going to do the show. And he said she just walked on and sort of uncurled and did the show and then came back off an hour and a half later and folded back on again. And I think there is an element of that.
I feel like when I say this, I'm comparing myself to them, which sounds very arrogant, but there is a kind of, I totally get it. Like, I read a book about Richard Pryor, and there was a bit where they said, and I hate to add, a lot of these people did some awful things as well, you know, just putting all those things to one side.
Of course.
But like, you know, he, something where his, one of his wives or whatever said, basically the thing is he was really boring when he wasn't, like, he'd just lie there in bed, not moving, like literally not. And I'm not that bad, but I did, you know, I've had a real come down off the tour and off the Edinburgh that I've just done, because life makes sense when I'm on stage and doing that. And as soon as I'm not, it can be days. And I just, wither into this. How do you, I mean, this isn't what I was going to talk about specifically, but how do you feel about that going into performance? Because when I look at you, so first thing I say is you do many things very well, which is very cool. I don't think I even knew you were Luke's sister.
Oh, really? When did you find out?
You know, my ADHD is so weird that sometimes I say that and then I go, is she Luke's sister? It's like, that's Luke's sister.
That's,
you know,
my
this.
Father. Okay.
Yeah, that's your thing. You're Luke's sister. No, not really. But that's, I didn't know you were, but I think from just seeing you on social media and really enjoying bits and bobs and the Nadine stuff. And I mean, I must have known you before then, but I think I've only met you once, haven't I?
I think so. Yeah. It's one of those things. There's some people in comedy that I've barely met, but because of social media, you feel like, I know this person, I know what they do. Yeah.
This is what I wanted to get into. And I feel I was thinking about the question. It's hard to say without it sounding kind of stalkery, but I guess all the internet is kind of stalkery. And I'm not, go on it. I don't particularly follow people that much because I get stressed if I look on it for more than like 10 minutes or anything, you know. But it's, I do feel like, you feel like you've been hanging out with these people.
A friend of mine calls it the pocket family, because you get your phone out your pocket and there they all are.
They're all there waiting for you. Hello, we're still here. Yeah. We've been waiting for you.
Yes. And I rely on them.
And he gets things wrong, you know. And I'm like, oh God, what's he said this bloody time? Here we go. Come on then, Donald Trump or whatever, you know. Let's have a laugh. I think we love that.
I've got all my angry dads in one place.
Yeah, it's a bit like that Black Mirror episode where where they're all on the bikes, which not many people like, but where the guy, Daniel Kaluuya, isn't it, who ends up
1,000 credits.
Yeah, and he threatens to like slit his own throat on TV.
Yes.
And it's this big revolutionary moment. And then they turn that into the part of the...
They commodify.
Yeah, they commodify. That's the word.
God, they network him.
Yeah, they turn him in. And in a way, like I sort of miss Donald Trump quite a lot. I mean, I still have terror when he comes on and I think, oh God, the fascists are going to take over and all this stuff. Or are, you know, but I still kind of go, oh, there's that guy. He was like in my pocket all the time and he's all this mad shit. And it was kind of, I guess it gave you an enemy, you know, it gave you a kind of.
Well, do you remember you know, the end of the Donald Truman Trump's show? Nemesis. I think that's how people know
you. I'm his nemesis, do you think?
Yeah, he talks about you often. They cut it from the speeches. When they televise the bits of speeches, they always cut his monologue on his nemesis, Colin Holt, differently.
Yeah.
Mainstream media for you, Colin.
I'd love to see a poster where it's like the Transformers poster, where it's like protect, destroy, and it's me protecting him and destroy, and we're facing off.
Yeah.
I feel...
That's nice.
I mean, I'm quite pathetic with any political. Anyway, I want to talk to you about that. There's so much I want to talk to you about.
Okay. So what was the initial question? Go for it.
Okay. Well, let's talk about you, Susie. How did you, so what were you doing before you sort of really went for it on social media? You were already an actor and musician.
Singer. I wanted to be an actor and I got into drama school in 2009. It took me 3 years to get into a drama school, but I got in when I was 24.
And 3 years of kind of going, not sorry,
auditioning and not getting in.
Right. Oh, good for you.
Yeah, man. I did a script writing degree because when I went to university, it was 2003.
Yeah.
So my brother's a couple of years younger than me.
Right.
And sort of the year it, after.
I thought he was older.
No, I'm two and a half years. it's because I'm about a foot shorter. But when I went to university, you couldn't get a funded place at drama school. So it was either your parents paid for it or there was a scholarship. It wasn't that thing where, you know, the government funded places that you pay back.
I was the last year of that, and I got £60 a year.
Oh, my God.
So I was right at the tail end.
Oh, so are we the same age then?
I'm 44.
Oh, okay. No, I'm 38.
No,
oh, the last year
those are two different ages.
Okay. That's the same. So it's the same.
Oh, are you talking about like secondary school, drama school?
No.
You're talking about university.
As in going to do like a BA. There wasn't like a BA that you could do at a drama school. So if I wanted to go to Central or whatever, I'd have had to pay the full whack or got a scholarship. And there wasn't that kind of family money. Whereas I think around 2004, 2005, they extended this funding of university places to include drama school. But anyway, so my brother went to GSA at 18 and I did a script writing degree, came out of uni and went, right, I'm going to try and do a master's. And it took me 3 years to get on one. But when I did, I then had 6 months before I went to do it. And I went, now's the time to try stand up because I'd always wanted to, but I didn't know the way in. So.
Right.
I finally went, right, how do you do this? And, you know, early Facebook, 2009 Facebook, there was a list of open mics. So I signed up for the first one that would have me and then started doing stand-up and figured, well, I'll do this for 6 months and then do drama school. And it's 14 years, still here. still
oh, really?
Doing it.
So, but did you actually go to drama school in the end then?
Yeah. I went to...
Oh, so you, but you started the stand-up, you started stand-up, then did drama school, then you
just kept
stand-up
going. Yeah, and did it all the way through.
And were you always kind of like Shirley Bassey and Judy Garland?
Yeah.
And all that? Were you already into all that stuff before drama school kind of?
Yeah. So in like the 3 years between me finishing uni and going to drama school, I had like various jobs that I could get. And I went to first ever one was I went to Iron Appa as Christina Aguilera tribute for 3 months.
Oh, wow.
But my thing used to be that I could they call me like a woman of four voices. My brother's like an amazing impressionist and I can sing in four different voices. So I would go out there and so I did Christina Aguilera was my that was what I was hired to do, but I'd also like do sets as Shirley Bassey and Liza Minnelli and Judy Garland, Kate Bush.
Oh. So sort of, it was like a kind of impression. Singing.
Impression.
I do a lot of Scott Walker videos on Instagram, which I don't know if anyone appreciates. But
I don't think I've seen this. I love
I
Scott
think I've
Walker.
Just listened to it because I can do what I sort of tried to do. My big thing with the internet with social stuff is I just consistency is I will go and it's ADHD again. What I'm trying to do at the minute is with the ADHD is just do like as many as possible when I'm on a high.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And then, you know, because I know there'll be a dearth of time where I just can't to do it. I mean, it flips with me all the time what it is that I find hard. You know, it can be boring stuff like tax, but it can be something really fun, like doing a fun video. It can seem like impossible to me. So but I do, what was that? I, like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles soundtrack, you know, sort of like, Leonardo leads, you know, that kind of Donatello does machines. And I think it's just from listening to Scott Walker so many times, I can do it. Anyway,
yeah,
I just wanted
and he's
to
got
that.
A very
But I love singing, a singing
thing.
Impression. Mm. I prefer doing it than a talking impression. Like Luke's.
I don't think I'm very good at talking impressions. Like I do these Nadine Dorries videos, but they were never meant to be an impression. And I've heard that because Stuart Lee's heard my Nadine Dorries and he said it sounds nothing like her, but it's exactly like her. And I'm like, I'll take the compliment.
I think that's pretty, I think sometimes you can turn them, I guess it's like with star stories of Murdering Successful, isn't it? There's some things where like Luke is very funny as well, but he's also like, he's got the skill at
his spot on.
And I could do a rough approximation, but do something that is kind of mad or funny with it.
I think the gist is the most important thing.
What's that, sorry?
Like the gist of the person is more important than like pinpoint accuracy. So there has to be like a hook with an impression, doesn't there?
Definitely. And I think with her, there's such an attitude, isn't there? There's such a... But then I saw she's actually from Liverpool, isn't she?
Yeah, and she's done everything she can. I didn't think that at all.
I didn't get that at all. That didn't clock with me. And then she's now doing this whole like, I'm a working class girl and they're keeping me out of the house thing.
All of a sudden, she's very working class again.
So I did like one video of her. Sorry, this sounds
good.
I did one. But I did. There was one day where I was on an absolute high as a kite. And it was because I was filming the Checker Trade advert and I was, they made me do it. It was like right at the tail end of having to do COVID-y, lockdown-y things. Right. So I had to sit in a hotel in somewhere in Surrey or something. I don't even know where it was.
Yeah.
And for some reason on that day, so with Twitter and Instagram for me, I'm always taking them off my phone, you know, having a month of sort of bliss, but also this vague sense that I'm missing out on something, and then put it back on my phone and having a huge amount of excitement and then a sort of terror and just sort of overwhelmness creeps in. And I take it off my phone again. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, on that day, I did like, it was the Speaker of the House of Commons. Do you remember when, what was it? It must have been Boris Johnson getting done for the Partygate stuff, I think, the initial round of that, which was years ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Uselessly hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, just got, now, come on now. We're all, you know, I'm doing my best. And I just, but like, I was enjoying turning that. But basically, I was saying I know exactly what it means. So I was like, I was really enjoying not trying to get the voice exactly right. And actually, someone tweeted me like, he's actually from Chorley or something, not you're doing a finger.
Oh, God. Right.
But it is like, so exasperated. We don't know what's happening. You know, just like someone trying to hold the place.
Like a rubbish geography teacher who's got absolutely no authority. Yeah.
And they're all throwing paper aeroplanes and they're all, similarly with, so Nadine was like a woman from Nottingham, basically, where I'm from.
Right.
Like, you think they're clever, don't you? Do you know what I mean? This kind of like, he's my
vibe.
Leave him alone, all right. The reason I thought of that, because it reminded me a lot of sort of Nottingham women of that age that I grew up around, was when Keir Starmer was saying something, she was going, boring, you're boring, mate. it was triggering for me, I think. So I was like, oh, no. It's like sort of a really mean dinner lady or something where I grew up. Do you know what I mean? Like someone who would have...
Yawnsville.
Just been like, I think you're clever, don't you? With your
well, that was her. I did a video when she... Because she had like a committee hearing, which is the one where she went, I shared my Netflix password with everyone in my family. And the people on the committee were like, you know, you're not supposed to do that. that was the one. And in that video, they were like, well, we've got these numbers here from 38 Degrees, you know, she's an organization. And she said, she sort of was like scoffing at 38 Degrees. And in the video, I was like, yeah, well, they're all virgins, which is the most Nadine Dorries thing I could think of. That's the sort of thing she'd come back with. Yeah, they're just a load of virgins. It's like, ew, that's her vibe.
but because, she thrives by dividing and putting people down and naming, basically. It's like the lowest governing.
Which is the Tory front bench now. That is what they're like. Not that she's not at the front bench anymore. We don't know if she's resigned or not.
There was this period, but I go in and out of it so much. There's a period where it was so exciting. Mm-hmm. I think that we, I don't know if I just had time on my hands, but I just completely devoured it. I think it's the same week, like Priti Patel, like called Yvette Cooper a cow. Do you remember that? You saw her just go, cow. like to a self kind of thing. It was so, it was all so exciting. I think then it just gets exhausting, doesn't it? You know,
I think it's funny when people go, when it comes like a real circus and it is like you say, it's really fun. It gets really fun to watch. And when people get all high and mighty watching it, go, oh, the rest of the world is laughing at us because of this. I'm like, well, I can think of worse things than like other countries laughing at us because I think it's funny. I'm not bothered about other countries laughing at us. I want our society to improve. How about that? But people are only really interested in vibes, aren't they? It's embarrassing. It's like, well...
It is embarrassing.
Well, the worst thing about Brexit isn't that it's embarrassing. Surely.
Yeah. Yeah. It is embarrassing though, isn't it?
It is embarrassing.
The international... Oh God. Anyway, sorry, let's go back to you.
Embarrassment. Yeah, sorry,
I did a full-on Colin Holt there and literally went, you said, I was doing Nadine's, and I was like, yeah, I did a Nadine Dorries. Oh God. Anyway, I remember doing this improvisation pilot. This is back to me. Improvisation pilot. Once Robin Ince and Sarah Pascoe were in it. And Sarah Pascoe like telling me off during the recording for talking over Robin. And I think she was sort of joking. She was like, I'm going to take away all Colin's points because he talked all over Robin then. I mean, now,
stay with you, though.
Now I'm in the Neuroverse. I know that there's a big rejection sensitivity.
Gotcha.
RSD, what could the D stand for? Disorder, I guess.
Right.
So something like that.
Okay.
This is one of the worst things of the ADHD is you're like, talk. I've got to tell everyone all these things. And then someone does that. Right. And Sarah was, was right, you know, but like, oh my God. Anyway, so please forgive me if I talk all over you.
No, but that's very interesting because I take, what I would consider like impersonal rejection, like when I get turned down for an acting job, most of the time, even if it's annoying because I wanted it, I'm all right. Whereas personal rejection, I take extremely hard. Like
from a friend or a date.
Yeah, or even just a colleague. Like if it's like a joke, if there's something a bit snide from another comic about me, in front of me. I will probably think about that for months and just be like, oh no, they must think I'm really awful to have said that in front of me. Just so stupid because it's usually like throwaway comments. Yeah. I should say I'm completely undiagnosed with anything, but I definitely feel like personal rejection and like any form of breakup I take like appallingly to the point where I was single for 10 years because I was like...
Because you couldn't bear...
After that... Yeah, after like the last breakup, I went, I ain't going through anything even resembling that again. And I understand the feeling of taking something that personally.
Yeah, I mean, I've been married for 13 years, I think. And we've been together for longer than that, you know, so.
Right.
But in the past, God, yeah, rejection is just, I just couldn't. Oh my God. It was just,
unable to like
stand the concept of it. It was so, it makes me sound like a kind of me, you can't do that to me kind of thing. But I am more maybe Donald Trump and I aren't so different after all, you know. That's what he'll say
maybe
to me.
Maybe that's
when
why we all hate
meet.
Him because they say, don't they? You cringe at what you most closely resemble.
Yeah. God, I used to find that like watching
Trump.
Watching like The Office and stuff, that was so good, wasn't it? The original Office, just just like Ricky's character.
Yes.
I just come away feeling sick. Not people just go, oh God, it's so cringe, isn't it? I can't watch it, it's so cringe. You know, before people sort of got it, and then I think, I got it straight away. When I first saw it, I remember genuinely thinking, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. You know? I'm not just saying that, like genuinely. But yeah, come away just feeling sick because of recognizing the elements of myself in him. In David Brennan.
My one is Alan Partridge. As I get older, I love Alan Partridge. And I think Steve Coogan's amazing and just gets better at it. But I'll watch Alan Partridge and go, I do that.
Yeah.
I fold my arms and pontificate at people just like
that. Did they get stuck in your head? Because these things, I think this may be a neurodiverse thing because Josie talked a lot, Josie Long, in her show. I'm hopefully going to interview her soon about how you know, she's got a very sad bit in the show, which I totally relate to, where she says you can remember an advert you saw in 1987, but you can't remember the last week with your kid, which is genuinely quite upsetting. That some things,
that's deep.
Good things don't.
Yeah.
Anyway, but something like that, like a thing. And I've got a thing from this show, Gimme, Gimme, Gimme. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I used to love. I think now I've become a little bit mean about it, but I actually thought it was fucking great when it was out. But
I loved Gimme, 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 yeah.
Yeah, but there's one where he ends up, James Dreyfuss's character ends up like spending New Year's Eve on his own. And it's because he kind of can't choose. I think it's because he can't choose which party to go to. None of the parties are sort of good enough for him, and he ends up on his own.
Right.
And I always get, whenever I don't get it so much anymore, but that scent, I guess it's FOMO, isn't it? But like, I think, God, I'm that guy in that, in Gimme, Gimme, Gimme.
Right.
It's so wedged in.
You don't want to pick one. Yeah, you don't want to pick one thing, with meaning you miss out on the other things. Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Oh, definitely. And the other thing I get is when, for example, like my boyfriend's a comedian, and he's in Toronto, and he does this thing where you submit an audio comedy album to Sirius Radio, and then you get royalties from it if they accept it. And he's doing that, and he keeps saying, get an audio album recorded, and then submit it to Sirius Radio, and you get these royalties. And I'm frozen with it because I can't get it wrong. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they turn it down, who cares? But I'm like, no, I just won't do it in case it goes wrong. And most things I won't do that with. Most things I'll go, no, I'll throw myself into it. But this thing.
What is it? So if the audience don't go with it on the night, do you mean, or that you haven't?
Yeah, well, yeah.
If
it's not perfect, then how can I possibly do that? Whereas with Edinburgh, I don't have that at all. I'll submit a title with, you know, a paragraph worth of material that I might have written and go, there you go, I'll get that ready for August, no problem.
There's something comforting about it, isn't there? I guess it's the same with like what we're doing now, like podcasts and stuff, is why they're so comforting to people like us, because we're not trying to, you've got to get it perfect, you've got to hone
it.
Disposable chat. Really.
Yes, And Edinburgh, I guess I see as like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm used to it. It's like this, I don't know how many hours you've done, probably more than this, but like this is my 9th solo hour this year. And I'm like, I've done 8 of these. I know you always come up with a show in the end. So when you go to submit your Edinburgh show 6 months before the Fringe, it's like, that's fine. But with this audio album, I'm really like frozen about it. Oh, no. Oh,
so is it the show you did already though? Or is it like a mix of stuff?
No, it would be like, you could kind of just do a best of. You only need to submit about half an hour of material as well.
Oh, right.
And you just
look into that. That sounds quite good.
You'll do it.
I'm going to get in there first.
Colin did it. That's really annoying. I told him about that.
So, I'll put that on the poster. But you, like, I find, for me, I thought you were going to say, like, oh, but should I do that? Or should I do it with these people? Or should I do it this way? Or should, because that's where I come undone.
Once
I'm on a thing, I'm okay. But my wife is incredible, you know, and we work together as a as a business now.
Right.
Partly because we're trying to get some of her stuff, and we're writing together. We've always written together.
Amazing.
But she's, you know, I mean, she's not by her own admission naturally skilled at this, but she's having to like work out blocks of time for me, like you do this at this point, you do this at this point. Because I would, I can't, I see the, I call it on my, on the normal, on the usual Neuroverse show, I call it the many-headed hydra, you know, is like, could just go that way, but I could also go that way. And what about that way and that way?
Sure.
And that can, for me, on a bad day, that can be like making a cup of tea or doing some work or having a sandwich or going for a walk. Oh my God, it's so unbearable.
Right, right.
So we're here for answers, not for my problems. Too.
No, but you on for, because I...
Yeah. It's lovely to chat to you about it.
And you? No, but I find it very interesting because my best friend has been diagnosed with ADHD in the past year. And this isn't the thing, it was like, and now I think I've got it. You know, everyone goes like, I think I might have it. But I see the, like some of the things he's gone, I've always found this difficult and I've always found this difficult. I go, oh, yeah, same. And I just figured everybody did. And the thing that really sticks out to me is when you've got four things to do in a day and don't do any of them. And I have that. I'll get to 9 p.m. and go, why didn't I do that self-tape at 10 and then write the thing that I just had to send off that would take 15 minutes at 1? But I didn't. I left it all till 9 p.m. and now I'm like, ugh. And that, so
today,
get that.
Suze, I was like, I want to, okay, this is the first chat I'm going to do for the show. I want to have a proper chat with Suze. I sort of realized I don't really know you that well. So I was like, I know you're lovely, but I was like, oh, I want to, you know, oh, I don't want to just appear a bit like, I don't really know what I'm doing, you know? So I was like, I sit down and I do like an hour before, you know, or half an hour, even 20, do fucking 15 minutes, dude. Mm-hmm. Instead, I dug out the herb garden and made it. Literally, I'm looking at it now. Like I bought the slabs at the weekend. And I think
it looks amazing.
I've left it for ages, but I just did it all in the hour.
Well done.
Because I couldn't. Yeah. I mean, so something good has come from it.
Yeah.
At the same time, I couldn't bring myself to do the thing that I had to do. So instead, I did a whole patio.
Right.
It's 4x3 slabs.
Right.
And I've like created this, I'm looking at it now, that's why I'm looking at it. Create like this artistic border around it with bricks and stones.
Oh, this is great.
And I'm like, why can I not do that with my career?
I honestly, I think that's a better use of your time than sitting down and going like, what's the worst thing about Suze Kempner? And I won't mention that.
Yeah. I don't know any bad things about you. I don't think
there's quite a lot
thing about you. Well, so let's try and keep on track. I'm doing my best here.
Yeah.
So you started doing stand up. And what was your initial stand up? Yeah. Was that similar to what you do nowadays? Do you still regularly gig as a stand up or are you?
Yeah, more so now than pre-pandemic actually, because now there's more work because I built a social media following. So now people are like, ooh, come and headline our gig. And because you have followers on Twitter. It's like, what am I going to do when Twitter dies anyway?
Is Twitter your number one thing? Is that your...
It is, and it really suits me. And I know it's a cesspit, and it's got worse in the last 6 months, obviously, but more than 6 months. It's got worse since Elon Musk took over. But I kind of think, like, it's only got... It's not... I don't think it's fundamentally changed. I think it's just worse.
Right.
So I'm kind of like, well, maybe it'll improve again, because I'm ever the optimist. You have to be on the left.
But I feel like you're very much turning, you know, lemons into lemonade sort of thing. And I feel like, because I feel like you're battling in there. That's what I love about it. I love you post those things.
It ain't making me leave.
I love that you know, people will say awful stuff at you and that, and you just post it and just, you just go for it. It's like, come on, there's like complete... And I love that. I think in the right way. I mean, it seems kind of shameless.
Yeah, it is.
Shameless sounds like a bad word, but as in shame-free, should we call it? Because shame is one of the worst things, I think, from everything I've read and, you know, all the research I don't really do, but attempt to do on this. Shame is like the killer, you know? And I feel like you're like without shame and you're just fighting. Come on then, you fuckers. You know what I mean? And it's wonderful.
Pretty much.
And it makes you seem quite bulletproof on it. So with the rejection sensitivity, do you get that on social media or do you have a shield?
Way less so. Yeah, it would depend who it's from as well. Because obviously, like some mad transphobe is going, you are ugly and terrible at comedy. That's funny to me because I'm like, oh, I didn't want to have sex with a transphobe and I didn't want them on my shows anyway. So
yeah,
that so don't worry about it, mate. It would be, it, if like, I'm trying to think, I don't know why this name came up, but like, I love Dara O'Brien and we've worked together a couple of times and I think he's so nice. If Dara suddenly came back at me like, Suze, this is such a stupid thing to say about something I'd done, I'd probably be like, oh no, this, and I would feel that, you know, cannonball to the chest for the rest of my life. Where, but not that he has, obviously. No. But it, yeah, so it very much depends who it's from. It, yeah,
right.
I don't
so
mind
there's
getting
a sort
personally
of
rejected by a man I despise, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Otherwise, you're giving them power, aren't you? Giving them.
Yeah, that's it.
Worth,
yeah,
and well, everyone has worth, but as in, you're giving their kind of fears and.
I see, because I'm on Twitter, like, you know, 18 hours a day. I'm straight, I'm cis, I'm white, I'm thin. Like, there's really, I've basically won the lottery in terms of societal norms and standards that they have. So I see firsthand what fat women have to deal with. It must be awful, all because of like how much space they take up on a planet where there is room for everyone, no matter what you're told. So I find myself going, right, well, I have to fight the corner of people who don't have, like, you know, and what black women get and what trans women get. I don't have any of that. So if I start to find stuff too hard, I can just shut my laptop and go about my life for a few hours and then open it up again and go back on Twitter. So I think it's important to just, I always find it's important for me to just remember, you're pretty lucky actually. Like the worst things they can actually throw at you are nothing like what they'll throw at someone who hasn't been granted a few privileges from some made up notions over the last few centuries, all based on this idea that the best thing you can be is a thin, straight, white person, which is it's so stupid if you put it like that. Sorry, I'm rambling now. I've never put
I'm loving it. It's and you go straight for those causes. That's the other thing I want to talk about, because I didn't, when I said about social media, talking about that, I didn't want to just be like, have you got any Instagram tips, you know? But just your opinion, and Luke's quite strong with his opinion as well, isn't he?
This way.
So I guess maybe you both grew up with it. I Jeremy Corbyn is a good example, right? Which I now I'm not saying anything either way, because I still don't know, because I can't. I guess again it's like the many headed hydra, but with opinions. Like but I went full in when he came in. Because, you know, my dad was a big CND, ban the bomb, was, you know, not a dissimilar person, was part of the miners' strikes and all this stuff. I grew up with a very, and it was during Thatcher, with very anti-Thatcher. My mum was always kind of pro-Thatcher, but just didn't say it.
Okay.
Till after my dad died. And then it was like, Daily Mail, here we go, you know.
I see,
which
right,
I think,
right.
You know, I, on another episode, I talked about how, you know, all that stuff is just, neurodiverse people especially are just so vulnerable to that, you know, just these opinions coming in and telling you what to think. And and everyone, I think, is vulnerable to it. But
gotcha. I mean, they know what they're doing, don't they?
But I just flipped so much, you know, and then a friend sat sort of talked to me about Jeremy Corbyn. And I remember he said, it was when Therese May was in, he said, I think if there was an election now, I'd have to vote Tory, which I just felt so, you know, but he was so, just saw it as so childish and sixth formery. But I then,
you start to question
it. I'm
not saying
I immediately took on his opinion, but then I, it was like a bubble had been burst in me.
Right.
And I couldn't, but I couldn't maintain this sense of like, but he's this, you know, and I think, I guess I've kind of landed somewhere in the middle, which is sort of nothing, which is why I basically try not to think about it because it's too the head fuck.
Oh,
but
too
I love
painful.
That you know what you think and you go for it. And I'm not saying you're incapable of changing your mind, because obviously you are.
No,
you believe in stuff and you will keep fighting. And I, I'm
definitely not incapable of changing my mind, because like, I used to really bang the drum for Blair when I was a teenager.
Right. Because, but that was so exciting then, because that was post-Thatcher and it was like...
And you take it on by osmosis. Yeah, I was 12 when we got New Labour. I was always like, I think it comes from coming from a family, but like Red Menace family on one side, load of Lib Dems on the other, but like old Lib Dems.
Red Menace, as in they were pro
big old socialist. Yeah. Okay. My mum's side of the family, like my great grandfather got an MBE. Turned it down very vocally because of the empire. I don't want any part of this. But he kept the letter and showed it to everyone for the rest of his life. And that's the most Seuss Kempner energy anyone could
have. That is what? So you've got role models for this. You've got a...
Yeah, yeah.
It's but not like, come from really nowhere, like, is what I'm saying. It's, yeah.
No, if I got offered an honour, which is never going to happen, I would turn it down and tell everyone, guess what? I got offered and turned down. I like that. That. So it's not noble. It's just... But I went out and campaigned in the 2017 elections, and particularly in the 2019 election. And the way I felt in the weeks that followed the 2019 election, no one should go through what I felt then, you know, rightly or wrongly. Like there'll be staunch Tories who will go through that at the next election, I expect. The way I felt was so awful that I can understand why people took a step back from it and just went, I want no part in this. I am envious of that because it was awful. Also, the day before the 2019 election, I found out one of my good friends had cancer, and I found out the day before it was terminal. And so it was bad few months all around. Things started to improve when we went into lockdown. I was like, oh, I'm just getting over the worst bit of this. And now we're in lockdown and I can just relax a little bit. Uh-huh. So I had a very unique experience of COVID. But like what I'm saying is, like, I totally get why some people went, I'll step back. I don't want it. I just won't have it. Because it was horrendous.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? And you feel like a fool. You know, I remember is it John O'Brien who used to write Spitting
Image? James O'Brien.
John, maybe it's not O'Brien.
Do you mean John McDonnell, the ex-Shadow Chancellor?
No, he wrote, he's a really famous writer and his name's gone, but he wrote a book called Things Can Only Get Better.
Okay.
When Blair got in, kind of thing. But it was it was called, the title was like, you know, 18 years as a Labour supporter under a Tory government.
Yeah.
You know. And he talked about when Kinnock lost and just walking around looking at people going, how can you accept this? How can you function?
Yeah.
How can you go about your day? And wanting this to continue, you know, and I guess I'm in no way sporty or football-y, but I guess it is a similar feeling, isn't it? Of just that sheer loss when, that's maybe sort of like reducing it, because obviously a football team doesn't actually dictate whether people starve or not, you know, but like.
But
it's a similar sense of personal, it is a personal rejection.
Yes,
it feels
horrible.
Like it.
And people were so polarized on Corbyn that people who who were friends and colleagues thought nothing of, like, they had to lash out because they were so angry, and they were angry at the defeat, and they were angry that Corbyn had helmed this defeat. And there is like a genuine, like, Corbyn derangement syndrome that some people just fucking hate him, and the days after that election were awful. So I was I was on Sky News that night because I went, I know, oh yeah, when they offered me, like, will you Sky News as the comic relief? I went, yes, because Labour are going to lose, so if I'm working, it won't be as bad. It was 10 times worse, obviously. I was on Twitter as the exit poll came in. I felt that, like, you know, cannonball to the chest, and I tweeted, like, things are going to be really hard for the next 5 years. We need to look after the most marginalized in society. And someone who I considered a friend, and I no longer do, like, they blocked me on everything after this, they just replied immediately, this is a minute after the exit poll, I hope you're fucking proud of yourself. And I didn't know what to say back to it. And then the next day they blocked me. And I presume that's because they probably felt a bit ashamed. But it's taken me 3.5 years to get to that, because I just felt like, I've let everyone down,
which is a real egomania. Because they felt they said that thing, and then
maybe they're genuinely furious at me.
We've talked much more about Jeremy Corbyn than I thought we would.
I never talk about him on podcasts because it's like the pain.
it was so painful. But then, you know, like I say, I flap around so much. So I've seen a comedian talk about it on a TV show and saying how, like, he, you know, essentially let down all those people who will now struggle because they'll never get into parliament because he was never going to get into parliament. So it was all a kind of, do you know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, I sort of get that as well. I'm not saying... Do you know what I mean? And I can't, I just, so again, I guess it's going back to like the many-headed Hydra thing. I'm like, well, yeah. I do see what he's saying and I do, but also I'm 100% there. I know I'm never going to be pro-Tory or that way.
Yeah, you would never be in a position where you'd
have
gone,
the broad church of Labour. I can see both those arguments.
Gotcha.
Which I think is a good thing, you know, I guess pluralism, that is pluralism, isn't it? I think.
Having two ideas at the same time.
Possibly. But I just really admire, but I find it a failing in myself. And I don't know whether it's a particularly neurodiverse thing or a thing in myself. I think pluralism is a good thing, but not being able to fucking just, you know, it's like Storm says in the X-Men, just pick a side, Wolverine. You know? So I guess I want to ask you in terms of the actual setup of this podcast, supposedly, is just, what is there any thoughts, not to put you on the spot too much, but any tips or thoughts you would give in terms of just being able to go to hold on to in an online forum or just in life, hold on to what you believe and stick to it? Like, what would you say is a tip to bat away the kind of the things that push and pull you and you know, that make you doubt yourself, basically?
Yeah, I think the tip I always give, and it's quite a weird one, is you can always get off that merry-go-round. You don't have to be on, I always use Twitter as an example because that's my main one. You don't have to be on Twitter. Like, no one forces us to be there. And as much as I kind of am still in a position where I go, I think I need Twitter for work. So I'm going like, well, I definitely need it to last till the end of Edinburgh because it's how I promote myself the best way. So as much, even though I feel that I don't need to be there, if it's making me angry or sad, I can just get off it for a few hours. And then it makes it always easy to deal with. Easier.
So just just walk away for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and not even, you don't even have to do it, but know that you can. It always makes things feel easier when you go, I can just turn this off. I got announced for that Doctor Who thing and people were horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And what? I went, this is awful. They're just like, people were furious and they were transphobic. Doctor Who fans were furious but people, like, the fandom is intense for Doctor Who anyway, but they were like, there was some really, and they're always the most vocal, and I went, this is awful, is this my life now? And I remember thinking, because it happened in March, I went, oh, maybe it would have been better if I'd never been given this job. And then I did go, now hang on, I don't have to be here on Twitter. I don't have to see these comments. And I got off Twitter literally for an hour and felt 10 times better. And then I went back on, started tweeting as normal. It was fine.
How many hours?
Knowing you can get off.
How much of your day is spent? Because again, with my Hydra thing, social media, I've got a friend who does social media, who teaches it, and he's always on it, man. He's sort of helping me now, but he's always like, got to get on it, you got to be doing more and all this stuff, and it cripples me, just the idea of it.
Right.
But because I'm like, well, I could go and do this thing on social media, or I could be trying to write a script, you know.
Yeah,
I then won't write the script, so it doesn't matter to me, so it's not. But I just struggle to really, you know, talk, you know, as in with the neurodiversity, I just really struggle to just fucking choose. What I'm saying, I guess, do you like break up your day into like, I'll do Twitter for an hour at 12 o'clock, say, or do you just go as and when kind of thing?
I maybe should do that, although, you know, therapists will always tell you should's a terrible word, but I maybe, like, it's probably better if I didn't open my laptop the second I wake up and go, what's going on Twitter? Because I'm immediately annoyed because you've just woken up. Oh, look what someone said in the night. It would be maybe better if I split up my day. However, every time I think that, I never do it. And I'm still here.
Did you like hide it? Because sometimes I hide my phone and stuff.
No, never. I do nothing to stop myself. It's just sometimes, occasionally, I will go and turn it off for a few hours and watch TV. Or
what I love is though, I really admire the way, and I didn't want to make, you know, and this is about you as a person, not just, you know, through the lens of social media. I admire the way you've turned it into a strength. You know, it's not a.
Oh, thank you.
Not just an obsession. You know what I mean? It's not like someone just going, here's my dinner and all this stuff. You know, it's like.
No.
Because you can already sing and dance and. Actually, I don't know if you can dance. You can sing and act and do comedy.
For a comedian, I'm very good at dancing. For a dancer, terrible. It's like that.
Okay.
The feedback I get, because that's all you can go on really on social media, is like, what am I getting back, either professionally or personally or in replies? I do get a lot of people who say, was feeling very down about the news. There'll be like some terrible government policy announced. And because I'm such a nerd, I can see it and I can see the headline and I can look into the wider ramifications of it and usually find the light at the end of the tunnel with it. Usually it's harder and harder these days, but I'll go, okay, what this means is, you know, it'll look like all is lost for the left, for example. And you go, the thing is, here are the stats on, how much public support there is for renationalization of water, of, you know, of the rail service. And I'll post that and people will go, I didn't know that. I feel better now. And I don't want to have like some kind of God complex, but it makes me feel good that I can give people a truth that is, I guess, seeing both sides of it. Yeah, it's awful that it looks like all is lost for nationalization. However, here is how high public, you know, appreciation of a nationalized rail service is. And people go, oh, good. It's not just a minority of us, because that's how it feels.
Yeah. And hopefully that dam will just burst eventually. And
I think it does. I think the NHS has something like 80% approval ratings.
Wow.
Tony Benn always said, if we try and take this country's NHS away, there will be a revolution. And they're doing their damnedest, but I think there is a tipping point.
Yeah.
And if I say that and people go, oh, good, I didn't realise there was. I didn't realise that.
So good, Susie. I mean, you know, I'm 44 now and it's taken me this long to sort of want to, I guess I've always, you know, when people talk about, God, just get very heavy for a second. I remember, do you remember the, I say remember as if it's not going on all the time, but with the refugees, when the refugees and the boats sinking and so on, first started to really get into the public consciousness, and there was that photograph of the little baby boy. I like literally cut it out and carried it in my wallet for a while to look at, to remind myself what to try and stop, or like I need to
remind yourself of the human aspect, the word migrant.
This is happening in the world and I need to stop it somehow. Or I need to be at the park and stopping it. And then I just never did. I carried it for a while and it was to try and make me, you know, I remember writing about that on Twitter or something and people going, but you can use your comedy shows, you know, to do good and all that. And I don't think I ever saw it like that. I always saw the comedy shows as, I don't think I've ever really given them much. And I think you can go too far the other way and think you are, you know, a messiah.
You see it all the time. People think I'm making a real difference. It's like, you're not. I'm not. I'm putting silly videos on Twitter.
It does, like say, it makes a big difference. And it's just recently I've started to realize and accept this, you know, like from the pandemic, you know, I did these stupid Anna shows just out of terror of money and not paying money noise. And people do say, you know, those shows really helped get me through lockdown. I'm like, really? You know, because it was absolute nonsense. But anyway, so the social media was there from the beginning for you, was it? Like doing that. So you've learned a lot of tricks and skills in terms of surviving it.
And going back all the way, I can remember going on a message board for the first time when I was 15, year 2000, going on the IMDb message boards to talk about, because I got really into Scorsese when I was 15.
Right.
I have to have all of it. I have to see every single one of his films. So I'd be on the message boards going, like, I've just seen Mean Streets. What should I see next? And then there'd be all these film nerds. So, and that is a social media. I think social media is always something I was going to get on board with. And I think it was, like, looking back, it was always the way that my comedy was going to take off. And I like that I can translate it to live, because not everyone's kind of been able to translate live to the social side of things and vice versa.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful that I've been able to translate it into like an Edinburgh audience, basically.
It's been really lovely to see.
Oh, thank you. Cheers.
And just to finish off, the Doctor Who. So what is it? What is the Doctor Who?
Oh, so
you're doing, what is that? I was very excited to see that.
Thank you.
I then did no research on it. I was like, must find out what that is, but didn't.
It's only recently that I've fully understood what it is.
Okay,
it's a spin-off. It is canon. It's part of the Doctor Whoniverse. And it's across multi-platforms. So it's audio dramas, novels, comics, video games, and more. And I'm Doom in a Doctor Who spin-off called Doomsday. Doom apostrophe S day. And it's 24 hours in the life of Doom, the universe's greatest assassin, as she tries to find the Doctor. And it's so fun. I was doing some stuff for it yesterday.
Filmed it? It's been filmed.
One thing that was filmed, and most of it's audio. And then,
but it hasn't been out yet. Has it been out?
The only thing that's out is the comics. So they're releasing it like chronologically.
That's so cool. So it's kind of like this interesting, weird new character, and we're kind of going to drip them through. And is that through Russell T. Davis? Is he the creator?
Yeah, it is. And it's really funny because some of the fans were speculating that Russell T. Davis was going to shut this down because he definitely wouldn't be happy about it. I'm like, he chose me.
Why do they think he wouldn't be happy?
Because they're like, it is amazing how obsessed with me some people get. Like, some people just hate it. I'm like a centrist with Corbyn. Some people just fucking hate me.
So you have like kind of actual nemeses who are like, down as a force.
Yeah, it's a little unsettling. They'll like talk about me and make videos about me. And watch these videos, and I don't usually, I only see what they say about me if I'm tagged in it, but it's amazing what some people decide about me. But do you find they decide what your comedy is about? So they're like, well, she just goes on stage and rants about Tories. I'm like, that is not my act.
You know what? I think I've...
you know my politics from my act, but that is really not what I do on stage.
Yeah, you don't, do you? You're not actually, political stuff.
I wouldn't even say I'm a political stand-up. There is some politics in the stand-up. But I mostly go on stage and going, oh, remember this video game?
Yeah. Oh, God, that's what I want to talk to you about before you go.
I've
got my son heavily into Golden Axe, the Mega Drive.
Oh, amazing.
Because you did a whole show about Mega Drive specifically, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah.
And the Golden Axe, big fan?
We had Golden Axe, me and Luke. It was on like a multi-game cartridge. I think it had four games on it, the Mega Drive cartridge. And Golden Axe 2 might have been it, actually. Maybe
Golden Axe
2,
not as good as the first, I think.
Right. I think it might have been the first then.
This is a middle-aged man thing to say, but I genuinely think the first is like a work of art. It's like I know when everybody is coming, where they're coming from, the ones you can knock off a ledge.
Yeah.
I know where you can actually, I played it so many times and then I didn't for years. And then, you know, we've started playing it. My son started playing it. And so I'm and it's like because I'm really scared about him not being able to do football and I'm shit at football. You know, I don't want him to go through stuff I went through, but I'm suddenly like, oh, wow, I've got a thing he admires and it's Golden Axe. I know literally where you stand to get a guy in such a way that...
I love this.
The way that he can't hit you back. It's like this particular... It's so lovely.
think there was a practice mode in Golden Axe where it was just three levels. And me and Luke
used to trial each other
on it. When we were, we'd been like, I'd be 11, he'd be nine. And we would like time trial each other. So it was like early speed running. And now I
love it. Finish it first, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. We'd be like, right, who's going to be faster this time? We used to play it. We had to share a box room and we'd play Golden Axe and time trial each other like a pair of nerds. Yeah.
Well, that makes me feel better because my kids are basically sharing a box room and I feel really... And they're similar. Actually, what, are you 2 years older than Luke, do you say?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, literally the same.
85, he's 87, yeah. Yeah. How old are your kids?
They're like 2 years between each other. They're 8 and 6.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Right.
At the minute.
Right.
This year.
For now.
lovely. Oh, what fun. Yeah. You and Luke playing Golden Axe. That's so sweet. You know, at the end when you complete the main game and it has that music, I realized as we were playing it, I wrote a whole song to it as a kid, which sort of went, here comes Golden Axe. And he's gonna save the day. He's gonna, and he's coming your way. Probably that. I don't know who I thought Golden Axe was. Here comes Golden Axe. You remember the music? Oh, that was
I do.
Golden Axe, Golden Axe. Heroes come from all over the land. Oh,
is this it? That is the game.
Awful child. That is the song. But they do come from all over the land.
But we had to use what we could get. We didn't have access to, like, now kids can go on YouTube. They can find 1,000 backing tracks to anything. We back then, karaoke was video games. You weren't happy.
I don't think they're happier because of that.
You don't think they're happier? Oh, gotcha. No, agree. In my show this year, we're only going back to the year 2000, but I talk about going on Napster and trying to download songs and taking 3 days to download a song. And then when you get it, it's like a botched version the record company's put on there as like, so to dissuade people. And now, it's only 23 years. You can just go on YouTube and go, I want this song. And you can get every version of it, including like an 8-bit version. And
Yeah, but then the things they listen to are just like, I'm a banana, I'm a banana. Come on, guys. There's all this other music.
Oh, Queen.
So what have you got coming up?
You've
got billions of online fans, so it won't be.
But
you might as well tell
us. If Twitter still exists by the end of this, because it is feeling a little bit like the last days of Saigon currently. My boyfriend's calling me, go away. Twitter.com/SOOZUK, Suze UK. I'm also on Blue Sky, but if you haven't got an invite, it's very exclusive there, and it is just like shit Twitter currently. So it's just another one. It's the one that the guy who used to own Twitter runs. Just look up my name on stuff. But yeah, I'm in Edinburgh, 3:45 every day except the 15th at the Underbelly Bristow Square. I'm doing my show Y2K Woman.
Oh, wonderful.
All about getting 15 in the Y2K and feeling like a Y2K woman.
Thank you for listening to Into the Neuroverse with me, Colin Holt. You can find me on Twitter at Colin Holt, on Instagram at Colin Holt Comedy. You can support the podcast if you like it and want to keep it going. Money is the best way to keep things going. Go to patreon.com/Colin Holt and you can pay me anything up to £1 billion a week. And I will happily take it. Any more than that is just greedy. A big thank you to @EyesOnLegs, who did the music for this. So find him on Twitter and so on if you want to get him to do music for you. @EdShots, who did the original photograph. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support. And please do rate, subscribe, review, and like wherever you can. And I'll keep doing this as long as anyone's interested. That could include myself. I do lose interest very quickly. Also, make sure you check out my website. I am colinholt.com for all the latest news. Contact United Agents if you want to book me for any gigs or acting work or dancing work. I'm actually a very good dancer, or anything like that. Or if you want to contact me direct, it's colinholtcomedy@gmail.com. Thank you. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.